We're talking about the Roswell incident with Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, and this has been something that is a brand new experience for me because, sure, we've talked about Roswell in a very intellectual way, and it hits your brain in one way, but this is the first time that we've really explored the human side, how it affects the families of this strange event, and in ways in which that were often not good, ways in which that had a profound impact on their lives. Cause rifts in relationship, secrecy, and we heard the pain and the fear and the confusion and the voices of the people who actually were with the people who lived it and the people themselves. So this has been really, I think, an extraordinary look into a very unusual event in America's history. Your phone calls, your ideas and thoughts right when we come back. We're back, Coast to Coast AM, talking with Tom Carey and Don Schmidt. And guys, any quick thoughts before we go to the phones?
Well, I'd like to get my 2 cents in on this Andy Jacobson book.
Sure.
If I might.
Yeah, the Area 51. It made quite a media splash.
Yes. In fact, I was stunned at the media splash, and it became apparent very early that the splash was the Roswell addendum that she had put in there. And Don and I, we sort of chuckled to ourselves when we come across people who think that they could go into Roswell and solve the case in a weekend. We have spent a combined 43 years on the case, in this case alone, but there's still people that think that they can solve it in, a weekend trip to Roswell or a single witness. And it's because they don't know enough about the case to question a witness as to their veracity or what the witness what the witness is saying, how it fits into the story. So when I heard this book, the story about Roswell, I immediately, perhaps it's prejudice on my part, I immediately dismissed it because we've put together a framework. It's like a jigsaw puzzle, and most of the pieces are there now. And something so far afield as Premier Joseph Stalin hooking up with Joseph Mengele to scare the Americans with a Horton Brothers flying wing. The truth-o-meter just registered a tilt. So anyway, that's what I thought about it.
Yeah, it really strikes me.
I know. Tell us what you really feel.
Now it does elicit quite a response. This is something that it really affects all Americans, this event that happened, because it is our intersection with the cosmos, literally an intersection, a collision. So let's hear what people have to say. They've been listening for quite a while. Let's go to Dave on the wild card line from Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Dave, you're on Coast to Coast AM.
Good morning, Rob, Don, and Tom.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
Morning. During the 50th anniversary of Roswell in the summer of July 1997, all the networks on television were covering it, some more than others, the network news, CNN, MSNBC, Fox. And they were making it, they were parading around costumes and only talking about, the ridiculous angles, of course. And the Today Show, Good Morning America was the only show that took it even 1% seriously. And the anchor at the time was Joan London, and she was interviewing the Secretary of the Air Force, who had come out with Roswell case closed. I don't know if you're familiar with the Secretary of the Air Force.
Yes.
Right. It was a telephone book-sized a piece that the Air Force put out to say that Roswell never happened and these people are crazy. And so after the press conference, the famous press conference with the Secretary of the Air Force, with all the decorations on his lapel, he gave a press conference which was covered all over the country. And Joan London on Good Morning America, called him up and told him to be in on the show talking about Roswell. Well, he was on the show, and he didn't expect her question or her comment and was taken aback when they were discussing it. He said, well, this was, Project Mogul, which we had dummies drop from airplanes. And Joan London interrupted him and said, well, you know, with all due respect, Secretary, Roswell happened in 1947. The witnesses all are talking about 1947, and Project Mogul was in 1954. There's a discrepancy there of, you know, 6 years.
Good point.
Right. And he looked at her and he said, well, Joan, you know, those old people, they get their years wrong. They think it was 1947, but they were confusing it for 1954. And then immediately the show, like, was yanked. It immediately, there was no announcement or nothing. It just went immediately into a commercial. And I was taping it. I was hoping others in America were taping it as well and would put it up on, you know, a video site. But you can include it in your next book. You can, you know, try to contact ABC News and get that short interview.
It's a good idea.
She lost her job within the year. I don't know if it was months. And I remember she was fired. She didn't leave on her own. So I wonder. I always wondered if that had anything to do with it, that she spoke up against the government or something, and they fired her.
Well, she anyway, would not have been questioning Project Mogul. It would have been the anthropomorphic wooden crash dummy test, which did not originate till 53, 54. So 5-6 years removed. And the Pentagon's explanation at that time, as you described, was what they termed time compression. The idea, and it's a new term even within psychology. The psychologists aren't even aware of it. The idea that as we get older, we not only start to confuse the years, but also the decades. Well, there is no such ailment. There is no such condition. It was just, again, their way of explaining away Roswell and this time confusion. The problem is Roswell is historically documented. There was that press release. There were those banner headlines. I mean, we can nail this down to July of 1947. There is absolutely no doubt, not only of the month, but the year. So it's an insult to all elderly people to suggest that, you know, sorry, you people just are all suffering from dementia and memory loss, and that's the end of the story.
See, and the thing is, with elderly people, it's the long-term memory that remains intact. It's the short-term memory that, if you know, if they're going to have memory problems, it's the short-term memory. You know, what they had for dinner last night. It's not the long-term memories which remain intact.
Mm. Let's go west of the Rockies. Barbara from Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I love your program. And, gentlemen, it's really wonderful to hear you speaking the truth about Roswell.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I was just calling. It's really, I suppose, neither here nor there. But my dad was an officer in the Army Air Corps, and he had been recruited by the OSS in England early on in World War II. And so he was a very respected, always in law enforcement kind of person. And anyway, he said that he called my mother as soon as he found out about Roswell because he always believed that in flying saucers and outer space and everything, and she didn't. And he was in Ohio at the time, and she was in Tennessee. And so he remembers the phone call and the time very vividly. But then, of course, when the government retracted the state or the press release, you know, denying it ever happened, then he had to call her back, of course, and tell her that it wasn't true. But anyway, I thought that was just really interesting, and I appreciate you guys bringing it up. And in the face of so many witnesses, it's amazing that anyone wouldn't believe that it was true now, you know?
Well, and there are hundreds of them. Tom and I, to date, we have talked to over 600 people directly or indirectly involved. So as I was originally discussing this with Rob as far as excerpting some of the witness testimony, we literally could go through hundreds of audio tapes, videotapes of witnesses recounting and describing their personal knowledge, their personal involvement. We could do a whole show with nothing but eyewitness description and testimony. And it tends to make, not a believer, but it tends to convince you, as even CBS News put it, truly something extraordinary crashed outside of Roswell, New Mexico in July of 1947. And that's all we are stating on the record. One of the reasons we still have a very proactive, ongoing investigation. It's still something fluid, still something in the works. But it has convinced us beyond, you know, any shadow of a doubt that there is an ongoing cover-up. We could have former presidents Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter, the late Congressman Stephen Schiff, late Senator Barry Goldwater, former Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, and they would all lament the same concern, the same problem, that we are not being told the truth about what crashed outside of Roswell in 1947. So we're in very high company in that regard as well.
Mm. You know, the listener should be made aware that Don and I, we still have hundreds of hours of audio witness interviews that we've taped that have yet to be transcribed. So we still have those in the, you know, in the hopper, so to speak, to get those transcribed and to integrate those into the story. And so our investigation is still ongoing. We are still turning up new witnesses. We've turned up a potential. Well, Don doesn't even know about this. We turned up a potential new one today, and you know, it's just ongoing.
I was mowing the grass.
So we are still on the case. You can rest assured that. But we still have past interviews that we've done that have to be transcribed. And the problem is that the witnesses are passing away at a rapid rate. And so rather than take the time to, you know, transcribe everything, we just put it aside and go on to the next witness. Get them while they're still alive. And it's a sad commentary. But nevertheless, that is the truth as it stands today.
Let's go to the wild card line. Christian, Los Angeles, California, welcome to the program.
Hello, guys. I've called in before, and I just want to thank both the authors for the tremendous amount of work and research and dedication they've done to this, because this is a very, very important event. I just
thank
wanted to
you,
say
Christian,
that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. I've spoken to the both of you on the phone, on the line before. To kind of ring a bell with you guys, I believe it was a year ago, I told you a story of a resident who lives in the apartment complex here who apparently goes by the nickname of the Colonel, and I've discussed this with you.
We do remember
yeah.
that, yes.
I just want to apologize for the fact that I was unable to get any more information from him, and it is exactly with what you guys have said, that with high-ranking officers, not enlisted, but high-ranking officers who were either directly involved or one way or another were connected with, let's say, the research or investigative process of this incident, are absolutely forbidden to say anything about it. And basically, like I said with the colonel, one day I was at the computer in the activity center here where I live, and I called him over, and I said very quietly, look, I was seeing something on the History Channel a couple nights ago about the Roswell incident, and since you've served in the United States Army, you are a four-word colonel, you have combat experience, what do you think about? And before I could even finish what I was saying, he cut me off, and to an extent, to tell all of our listeners out there who are listening to this, he cut me off and he said, to an extent, yes, there was a crash. It was an unfortunate situation. It was a loss of life. Those poor little things. But I'm sorry, but I cannot discuss this any further with you. And then he executes a 90-degree turn and walks away from me. But it was his body language, his just kind of the air around me kind of froze, like, don't cross this man ever again. I mean, this is, you know, literally to go to an extent, this goes all the way up to the highest levels of the government. And I think it's part of, you know, I think the reason for the secrecy is it's all part of, I think, the military-industrial complex of, number one, we found something that is out of this world. Two, if the general public or population found out about this, the whole thing of this planet being visited by extraterrestrials, probably going all the way back to the time of the Egyptians and the Mayans, as Eric Von Däniken has said in Chariots of the Gods, I think the whole equilibrium of society would be very upset, and especially religion. And also, again, with the, we have this new technology that we can, you know, reverse engineer and see what we could have.
Very good points. What
anyway,
do you think, guys?
I just wanted to say, also, I'm reading Colonel Philip Curso's book, The Day After Roswell.
Yes.
What do you think about that book? I mean, do you think it's pretty factual? Do you think he has his facts straight? Because he was a Pentagon insider.
We're always asked why we did not even include any testimony from Colonel Curso in any of our works. And the problem that we both have with the book, if you go to the very first chapter, which essentially recounts the Roswell tale, tells the Roswell story, it's almost verbatim from one of our original witnesses who has been long discredited, the late Frank Kaufman. And when we learned that Curso had been going to Roswell and spending time with Kaufman before developing and then working on the book, it just raised further questions as to what the motives were and if he was truly telling a firsthand story or just recounting what Kaufman was describing to him. And unfortunately, because of that specific detail in the soup, so to speak, it casts a lot of doubt on Curso's entire story.
Let's see if we can sneak one in here. First-time caller line. David from Lynchburg, Virginia. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had an observation that you stated that it took 2 years before you saw a craft. And I was wondering, has anybody done any research to say that after the atom bomb went off, the gamma rays or light rays would have traveled at light speed for at least a year and then gone up into space, and maybe that's what the aliens detected, and within 1 year of that, they returned to the spot? And has anybody done a search within a light year of an area or ongoing investigations to actually determine possibly where the aliens came from?
Well, to be honest with you, I have often thought of that. How long does it take Rob said, the beacon to get out there, and then how long, try to make a mathematical equation out of it, how long it took them to get here. But you're talking about, as Carl Sagan used to say, billions and billions of stars out there. It would be an impossible task, at least in my mind, to try to figure out something like that, where the possible origin was. And then you get into the whole notion of relativity and bending space and stuff like that, and maybe that straight line approach doesn't work at all. I just don't know. Our mandate is to prove this story was a real event by interviewing people, by conducting, by searching for physical evidence and things like that. We leave because we get those questions all the time. We like to leave the speculation as to where they came from and why they're here to others. Our mandate is different.
But one thing we are sure of, according to the Air Force Project Blue Book files, there were more UFO sightings in New Mexico at that time than anywhere throughout the country.
We'll have to hold it right there. The phone calls are coming in. Let's get in touch. Let's see what you think about all this. I want to hear your thoughts. You're listening to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone. We're back. We're talking with Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, authors of Witness to Roswell. And we've got a lot of great phone calls. The board is lit up, so let's jump right back into the wild card line, shall we? Oxnard, California. Tim, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom, Don, and Ron. How are y'all?
Good morning.
Good morning. I do have a question. I'll lead into it. I think your work is very important. I think it's good to bring awareness to the masses of an event that occurred that's been hidden. Now, I'm 50 years old, and I'm writing a book right now in dealing with UFOs and a lot of other issues that are in accordance with UFOs. I got kind of make a brief. At 14, I was on the back of my friend's bike. He said, look, this is a UFO, and I saw this white light, and it went across the sky, the horizon, and just kind of went up into space. And so it was kind of a mind-opening thing, but I didn't really think much of it. Now, I live in Ventura County in Oxnard, and I'm really close to Point Magoo, which is the Pacific Missile Testing Center, as well as the Seabee base. Now, I know from sources that there's a lot of nuclear weapons that get transferred out of here. So I've been involved with perceiving unusual things that are going on around the bases out here. Now, I don't tell very many people this, but when I was younger, at one point in time, it was early in the morning, around 3 o'clock, I met my mom's. Of course, I'm 15 years old, and they have a house right on the beach in Hollywood Beach, Oxnard. And so when you go out to the front, you've got a deck, and you 3 steps down, you're right on the sand, and you walk right out to the ocean. So I was sitting there, and sitting on the steps, and I'm looking out. It was about a half moon, and I saw something between the water line and the house. I'm going, what's this? So I decided to walk out there to investigate what's going on. And I did. I walked out, and it looked like at a 45-degree angle, half of an egg shape. And I walked up to it. It was dark in color, and I walked around it. And there was an entity there, and a very small entity, and he had like a silvery suit on. I picked him up, walked him back to the house, set him down on the porch, went in, got a glass of water, handed it to him. He took it, and he drank it, but there was no mouth in the suit or anything. Little protrusion where the nose were and the black eyes, but they were not huge like you see on the grays. Anyways, so it was just he absorbed it, and I got the glass back, and I said, fill it up again, and I went back out. He was gone.
Was that the last time you saw him?
That was the last time I saw him, yeah. He was gone. So I don't know if he cloaked out or if there's another ship around the area that did something, but he was gone. So I said, okay, wait a minute. This is too bizarre. This is really weird.
Well, it speaks to the idea that these events are still ongoing. Tom, Don, what do you think? Are you still getting reports from Roswell-type experiences from people?
Well, we still, of course, our focus is Roswell, Rob. And when I get a report, I try to direct them to someone I know who does that sort of thing. For instance, abductions, I'll try to direct them to someone that does that. Certainly there are ongoing reports, and all you have to do is go on the internet any day, and I think UFOs and sharks are pretty much the most popular item. But all I can do is speak for myself, as I'm so focused on Roswell, is that the unless it's a report such as the gentleman's that is a close encounter, I usually am not too interested.
Right.
This particular one that the gentleman just spoke about sounds interesting.
It and, certainly does.
Unfortunately, he's on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast.
So. Yeah. There's other agencies he can report it to. We got a lot of phone calls. We're coming right back with you more. We're back on Coast to Coast AM, taking your calls. Let me jump around. I want to try to get to everybody. This is John, east of the Rockies, from Houston, Texas. Welcome.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good.
Great. Yeah, I just want to tell Tom hi. I've talked to him a couple of times. my dad is Bob Shirky.
Oh, yes, yes. We knew Bob. We know Bob very well, yes.
Yeah, how you doing? I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood about my dad. And my dad had been taken in by Frank Kaufman also. He was another one of the people that were part of the victimized group of by that guy. And I've just always been curious. And I wanted everyone to know, and you guys, I think you guys know, of course, that my dad was legit. But that that Frank was an unnecessary distraction, I think, for most everybody out there. And I'm wondering if you think that Frank was just a disinformation officer.
What's interesting about Frank is that he was from out east, Brooklyn, and was prepared to head back after he had served his stint at the base at Roswell. And the next thing he announces to his wife as she's packed to return home, that he's been selected to become a member of the Chamber of Commerce, which he would serve in that capacity for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
And we went back to the minutes where he was introduced to the other members, and it specifies that unlike all the other members of the chamber, Mr. Kaufman will be paid by an outside source.
Uh-huh.
So it's something, as we now, this race with the mortician, as we all call it, is something we intend to look into afterwards, because we believe Frank Maybe was selected to essentially man the store, keep an eye on the likes of Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, Kevin Randall, Stanton Freeman, that type of thing. Anybody who comes into Roswell, starting to nose around, latch onto them, grab onto them, make sure you slow them down. Distract them, divert them, that type of thing.
Exactly.
So it's something that the final chapter on Frank Kaufman is yet to be written.
It's a good call. Thanks so much for your call, John. Well, let's jump over to west of the Rockies. Charles from Palm Springs, California. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. I'm so delighted to get through tonight on this particular topic, because I'm hoping I can add a little tidbit that you've not heard before.
Great.
That would be great, yes.
Yeah, this is going to be, a pretty good one. In 1969 to 72, I was in the film service at Norton Air Base, which was the film depository for the Air Force.
Yes.
And I was a top secret control officer. And I think it was in 71, one of the staff there, who since passed away, who was manager of the depository, said to me in the hallway that Phil, I'll give you his first name, who was second lieutenant at that time, who was the top secret control officer for the alien footage in the depository, was going to look at the alien autopsy footage. And if I wanted to see it, I could stand inside the projection room back and watch it, and then not be seen. And I said, no, I better not, because it was, number one, under a need to know, and number two, I didn't want to get caught peeking through this projection room at this screening. Now, Phil, getting out of the service, I'll give you a couple hints, has since become a very famous director and has done a number of movies and, shall we say, was nominated for an Oscar for a film all about a baseball field, if that's a pretty good hint for you.
That's got to narrow it down.
Yes, it does.
Yes. So he was top secret control officer, and he had seen the footage of the autopsy, and it was in the film archives at the Air Force Film Depository at Norton Air Base. Where it's gone from there, don't know, but I hope. I've been trying to get through for years to tell this little tidbit. I'm so glad I re-woke up.
Well, Charles, do you regret not watching that video?
Well, the film, yes, I think so. But you know, when you're a first lieutenant captain, you don't know who's in the room or if you get caught, if you get some static about it. And I just thought, oh man, you know, it was real tempting because I thought, you know, to look, you know, to not be seen looking through the square, you know, from the projection room, you know, because you never know who would look back and, you know, say, hey, what the hell are you doing? Even though I had a top secret clearance, I could have. I certainly would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, great.
Could we ask you to please leave some contact information with the producer?
Okay, I will.
And in
for your
confidentiality.
Do you have a link in on the show tonight? On their website?
Yeah, you can go to Coast to Coast AM, and their website's linked right up. You can contact them through their website. It's probably the best way to do it.
Okay. I'll do
it. Yes, we do have our email addresses there. So if you please, and again, we promise anonymity. We would just like to speak with you.
Well, and also this way you can connect with Phil. You know,
absolutely.
If he will talk about it, but it just is that the one who told me about it, he's since passed away, and I'm going like, oh, man, you know, you just don't need to get caught. If you know what I mean.
Well, we thank you for your information, and please, please contact us. Okay.
Well, I can go and send an email now, and I could just, and like I said, it was. I assume it's something that you hadn't heard before.
Yeah.
And
I've been trying to get through for years to tell this one. I was so glad tonight to finally get through on an appropriate night.
We look forward to speaking with you in the near future.
Fair enough.
Thank you so much for your call, Charles. Well, that's a unexpected surprise.
Well, actually, Rob, it's something that for all the times we've been on Coast to Coast, invariably, I think you would be surprised how often it has elicited information, tidbits, possible witnesses, family members who, obviously caught up as far as in having an opportunity to finally talk to somebody about this case. And not be ridiculed, not be laughed at.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that it's a piece of the puzzle. It's something that they don't realize that, you know, for us, again, it's a tremendous help in concluding this investigation.
Yeah. Let's go to the wild card line. Bronx, New York. Jim, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi. How are you guys?
Very well. Thank you.
I wanted to ask, you mentioned earlier about Bill Brazell's property, the sheep pasture mainly. Are there any trees on that property that might harbor some artifact material embedded in them?
Oh, yeah. There's yucca plants all over the place and brush and sage and things like that, and there certainly are a number of those. And just a quick anecdote from the 2006 dig, the producers of the show that we did from the Sci-Fi Channel had some papers. They had set up a table. This is out at the debris field. They had set up a table with their papers on it, and a dust devil, a dirt devil, swooped down, its wind in a circular fashion, and swooped up all of the papers, lifted them up in a swirl, maybe 1,000 feet, and just took them thousands of feet away. And the producers didn't even try to get them because they had gone so far. And we're all thinking the same thing. This must have happened back in 47 with all this light material covering the ground. There had to be similar effects going on where wind or dust devils would blow this light stuff thousands of feet away, that the GIs who were sent out there to gather up all the stuff overlooked. So that's why we believe there is still material out there because of wind erosion and wind effects.
That's why we also have an ongoing joke that we may be better off looking in western Texas.
Yes.
For the materials in New Mexico.
Well, I appreciate you UFO archaeologists and the work that you're doing. Now, also, may I add another question, if I may?
Sure.
Are there any photos that are known to exist of the debris itself?
There were certainly photographers involved. In fact, one of the photographers that we describe in the book, Frederick Benthal, was actually brought in from Washington to photograph specifically the bodies. We know they photographically recorded every aspect of the entire operation, recovery of the debris, the material, the flights, operations at the base, at the sites. And unfortunately, we know who the photographers were, but We've had a number of false alarms as to negatives and possible photographs, but we've yet to see. We've had one even presently we're looking into as a possible photograph of debris, because it's a picture from supposedly the base of a chunk of metal. Why would you take a picture of some metal just lying there on the ground in front of you? So unless you know something yourself, it's still something that we are, you know, constantly on the lookout for.
We also have witnesses who have claimed to have seen the photos. Mo Cox comes to mind.
Yes, yes.
That he actually saw the black and white photos that were taken out at the crash site. And Mo, Mr. Cox, does come across as credible.
Let's see if we have time for one more phone call. The wild card line, John from Long Beach, California. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yes, I'll try to be brief. You know, I know you guys, I just want to ask you, you would understand why 1947, right after the World War, and you know, there was a lot of trauma, you know, in society and things like that. We weren't ready to handle something like this. You would understand why perhaps they would try to cover it up if you consider, you know, if we found out that there was really UFO, you know, aliens, our whole view of religion and everything else would change. I mean, you know, would it be as important to go to work tomorrow when you know that, you know what I mean? It would change everything, the dynamics. So you can understand, I think, wouldn't you, the reluctance to let something like that be known if, in fact, it did happen.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, we see we have no problem, and we feel that it was totally justified for them to behave in the manner in which they did, not only the extreme measures in covering this up, but in trying to essentially create time to ascertain the situation, analyze the material. Essentially, they didn't know if this was an invasion. They didn't know if, you know, these were benevolent space brothers who were here to help us. They had no idea. What else could you do back at that time? But the point that you made that we also emphasized, there was no mass panic. There was no mass suicide. All of the people who were personally involved back in 1947, they lived out their lives, they worked their jobs, they raised their families, they continued going to church, and they were there. They saw it firsthand, and that's 64 years ago. And for anyone to think that here we are in 2011, that we've digressed and that we're not ready, that we are not prepared to handle such an announcement, again, is just begging the question, just stalling for time, because they did back in 47.
And as Patrick Saunders, the Roswell base adjutant, said later on, we didn't know where they were from or what their intentions were.
Great ending to, I think, an amazing show. Thank you guys so much.
Our pleasure.
Good job, Rob.
Our
we appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Absolutely my pleasure. Well, there you have it, folks. Another edition of Coast to Coast AM. I think we can take a lot from this, and we're still putting the pieces together to the great mysteries of the world. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you to George Norrie and the entire Coast to Coast team. I'll see you next time on Coast to Coast AM.